troubles for former Uber CEO Travis Kalanick, Benchmark Capital on Thursday suing him for fraud, breach of contract, and breach of fiduciary duty, seeking to kick him off the company's board of directors. The lawsuit centers around a decision in 2016 by Benchmark, one of Uber's largest investors, to expand the board of voting directors from 8 to 11, with Kalanick having the sole right to designate those seats.
So Watch is Facebook's attempt to get its users to talk about these videos as they occur. They're more episodic content, like short video content, the likes of which you might also find on YouTube. So what they're really hoping that people will do is look at these videos, recommend them to their friends, comment about them as they're happening, and then come back and back again as the next episode show.
When I think of marketing, whether it's Blue Apron or any other company, and marketing expense, they don't give us all the numbers that I would like to see from Blue Apron, most importantly, the churn rate. Think of marketing as a way to sort of drive the business, like putting the pedal on the gas. If they take the pedal off the gas, then you see how well the car rolls without the gas being hit. What we saw was they took the pedal off the gas, but then the user growth fell apart. So, you know, what this shows me is that the customers of Blue Apron don't like the service enough to keep buying it without being hit in the face with advertisements.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's August 11th, 2017. 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for our Friday edition of the program. And another business day is underway. We have lots to cover this hour, including a little bit later on. We'll try to find you some cheap airfare. Rick Sini will be here with us. We'll talk about some of the efforts to curtail seat size, the growing smaller seat sizes, and also a couple of dates to look forward to maybe find really, really cheap airfare. That'll be a little later in the program. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. We'll check in with him and our portfolios in just a minute. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Asian stock markets slumped today following losses on Wall Street yesterday. The remarks and tensions around North Korea prompting investors to unload shares in companies that have been on the rise. Stocks closed lower yesterday. The Standard & Poor's dropped almost 1.5%. The Dow Jones Industrials slid by about 1%, more than a couple hundred points. The tech-heavy NASDAQ composite lost about 2.1%. Benchmark U.S. crude oil is at $48.50 per barrel. The last time we checked it, and the dollar gained against the yen and the euro. In Asia, the markets generally, all of them open except the Nikkei in Japan. It's a holiday in Japan today. The Hang Seng is off about 560 points, and the Shanghai is off about 53 points. Both of those good for about 1.5%. 2% for the Hang Seng. In Europe this morning, markets are all lower. The FTSE's off by about 1%, 86 points. The DAX and the CAC are also lower. The CAC off by about 1%. Futures in this country pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street, possibly. The NASDAQ futures are off about 14. Dow futures are off about 17. Couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. The Trump administration's push to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement is putting Mexico in a tough spot, threatening the system that helped turn the country into a top exporter through low wages or lax regulations, also proximity to the United States. Talks are set to begin August 16th, the Trump administration targeting the massive U.S. trade deficit with Mexico and a weakly enforced labor, environmental, and manufacturing rule set that for 23 years has drawn American assembly plants to Mexico, launched a flood of televisions, cars, and appliances from across the border. Facebook once again failed to buy Snapchat ever since it tried to copy it, mostly without success. Until now, Facebook's Instagram Stories, a clear Snapchat clone, has more daily users than Snapchat itself, and parent company Snap should be worried. The latest earning from Snap's report isn't helping either. Yesterday, the company said user growth for the April to June period was a paltry 4% from the previous quarter. Well, it is Friday, and that means it's Paul Nolte Day from Kingsview Asset Manager. He's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager there. He's with us every Friday morning. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be back again.
Good to see you. You're all tan. You were on vacation, apparently.
Up in the North Woods of Wisconsin, out on a boat waiting for the fish to bite.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, hopefully you had a good time and you're all relaxed and ready to go.
It was very good. It was good. Very nice.
What did we see happen yesterday on Wall Street?
Yesterday was kind of a mishmash of a variety of events, and certainly the rhetoric around North Korea was the main driver and has been really for this week. After we've seen the market go up 10 days in a row, now we've seen the market go down 3, and yesterday was the first 1% decline day that goes back to May. So investors are certainly on edge about it, but I think given the fact that we've gotten to new all-time highs as of Thursday, Friday of last week, I think the heightened fear, if you will, worries about a huge decline in the market, I think, are a little bit overblown at this point. We could get there yet, but I think it's kind of a wait and see at this point to see how things unfold.
Are there other stocks compared to others that perform badly when people are nervous about geopolitical tensions?
Well, just nervous in general. So the go-to companies are the Procter & Gamble's, the Coca-Cola's, the consumer staples, to a lesser extent maybe the utilities. And the companies that got hurt the worst yesterday have been those that have done the best. So the FANG stocks, technology, as you highlighted, were down over 2% yesterday after a huge run. They're up 15 to 20% this year. So investors, the first thing you do is sell first, ask questions later, and you sell first those companies that have done very well to lock in those profits.
How much have earnings, weak earnings by some companies, and also concerning points in the economy, economic factors paid into this?
Oh, there's certainly a fair amount of it. Retails, the retailers yesterday were down 3% on very poor earnings. You mentioned Snapchat earlier. So you had a bunch of those companies reporting as well, and that cast a little bit of a pall over the market, as well as poorer producer prices. Which is good for consumers, but not so good for the economy if we're trying to generate inflation. Those numbers came in a little bit below expectations. We'll see consumer prices here in a little bit this morning and see if that inflation picture has picked up. So all of those things, I think, conspired yesterday to push the markets down. And at this point, looking at it as a healthy correction as opposed to the beginning of the end, that we should really be concerned.
And so is it possible today we might see some buying opportunities and that might end the week? Or
I would like to see the markets, if I had to draw it up, I would like to see the markets continue their sell-off earlier in the morning and then in the afternoon maybe see a little bit of buying come into the markets and finish flat to up, and I think that would be a nice way to go into the weekend. It will depend a little bit on some of the rhetoric and to a certain extent, too, what we see from the consumer prices later on this morning.
Of course, the graph on the screen this morning is going up. Even though the futures seem to be lower, the general direction seems to be up this morning.
A little less negative. So, yeah, after 3 days, you'll get some bargain hunting coming in. You'll see the volatility index, the VIX index, come down here a little bit as the dust settles a little bit and investors start to embrace the fact that, okay, this is a more political than it is economic, and again, it's more rhetoric than it is action.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Tensions with North Korea continue to weigh down the markets. The Dow dropped 205 points Thursday, marking its worst single-day loss since May. The Nasdaq fell 135 points, and the S&P slid 36. Asian markets also slumped in early Friday trading as President Trump's remarks caused investors to unload shares in companies that have been on the rise in recent months. The volatility index, which is considered the best way to gauge fear in the market, is at its highest level in 3 months. More rough news for retailers. Macy's, Kohl's, and Dillard's all say sales figures fell again in the latest quarter as customers increasingly shopped online. Google's CEO canceled an internal town hall meant to address gender discrimination on Thursday. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 523. It's our regular segment on Fridays with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management. in Chicago. We kind of look over the economy and our portfolios. Paul, you mentioned earlier the Snapchat earnings. Blue Apron also released earnings, both not really good. Both were startup companies, new IPOs that signal what for other tech startups looking at the market?
Each of those is a unique situation that you have to take a look at individually. And I think when you take a look at the tech space in general, you are left really with two parts. One is the behemoths that we all know and are buying regularly. And then those that are trying to take off a little pieces here and there, the more niche type of companies. And I would put Snapchat and Blue Apron certainly in those categories. But where investors get caught up in is they get caught into the story as opposed to taking a look at the financials. And when you look through the financials and understand how the company is making money, where they're making money, where are they losing money, what are the expectations, then you can look at it from an investment perspective. Is it something that you should be buying?
And looking at the behemoths, too, that they're up against is sort of telling. In the case of Snapchat, it's Facebook. In the case of Blue Apron, it's Amazon.
And it wasn't Amazon when Blue Apron IPO'd, but certainly it's something that you have to take. You have to be aware of some of the risks in the marketplace and risks to my business model, what things might change going forward that could jeopardize my business. And certainly you have to take a look at those types of things. And a lot of that information gets disclosed in their filings with the SEC. So you get a chance to look at the financials, and they're pretty open about some of the risks, some of the things that are going on in the companies. It's all in very small print, and it's very hefty reading. Right. But it's something that you should at least understand and peruse, if certainly if you're going to put your money in it.
And so the question, I guess, comes to, do we invest, throw a little money at either of these companies, or go with the behemoths?
I steer clear of any of the IPOs and have really, in over my career for my clients, never really invested in IPOs. I always like to see how they operate as a public company, because once they become public, there's a whole new set of rules, regulations that they have to follow. As a private company, you have a lot more flexibility. You can do a few different things. I want to see how they function as a public company for at least a year to 2 years and get a sense then of what the financials look like and if the business is going to be a decent going concern.
Do you think it sort of shows other tech companies that might be considering IPOs that they'll stay on the sidelines for longer, or do you think it'll have any impact at all?
I don't know if it'll have any impact at all. The IPO market is really a function of how good the stock market is. So as long as the stock market is good and there's an investment or appetite to take those companies on and invest in them, because when things are good, I'm looking around for new ideas, that's a great time to IPO. When the market is down like March of 2009, it's a terrible time to IPO because nobody wants anything to do with the stock market. And it's very, very difficult in that environment to raise money.
So with our portfolios, cautious is the word of the day.
And we've been cautious for a little bit of time. As we've talked about the relationship between the bond market and the stock market, bonds and stocks have provided very similar types of returns over the last 3 or 4 months. We've shaved a little bit of money off of the equity side of the portfolios. We've increased the bond portfolios. We may do a little bit more, but we're kind of sitting tight right now. I'm a little bit more concerned about the tech sector because it has run so much and maybe getting a little ahead of itself and a correction there. And we've seen it over the last couple of days, the tech sector getting hit a little bit more. But I don't think it's time to run for the hills and turn everything into coffee can cash and bury it in your backyard. I think we're quite a ways away from that yet.
The coffee cans thing still works.
It's not a good retirement vehicle, but I know some people that actually do that. Yes, right. Well, extra cash.
Right. Paul, have a great weekend. Thanks for coming in and sharing your knowledge, as always.
Thank you. We'll see you soon.
Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, Senior Portfolio Manager there, SVP. Again, Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:39. Glad you're here for our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Turbulence on a transcontinental American Airlines flight from Athens to Philadelphia on Saturday became so severe that at least 10 people on board had to be hospitalized. We want to start there this morning with Rick Cini. He's the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com in Dallas. Rick, good morning. First, how commonplace are these incidents of severe turbulence where people actually go to the hospital?
Very, very rare. There's 2 million passengers that actually fly each day in the United States, and we're talking about hundreds of occurrences a year.
So what can we know? What should we know about incidents like this when we're flying, and what is the best way to prepare ourselves for it?
I'm not positive it's easy to prepare for because it's disconcerting whatever it occurs, no matter what. I don't care if you fly every day or fly once every 5 years. It's disconcerting no matter what. A couple things you have to do to prepare for it, in my opinion. Number one, infants in under 2 years of age can fly for free in a lap. A lot of people take advantage of that. It's just not a good idea for that to occur. They should have a seat and appropriate car seat for an aircraft in order to strap them in. It's difficult to do. As you can imagine, if your drink's flying to the ceiling, if you have your infant in your lap, what can happen in those particular cases? The seatbelt sign is there for a reason, mainly on and off so that you know when it's pretty safe to go to the restroom. In this case, the seatbelt sign was on, although they don't say that you can't go to the restroom in those particular cases. 7 of those 10 were crew members because they're up and down all the time. And in clear air turbulence, you almost have zero warning. Now, pilots will go up, down, around, is whatever they can do around storms, jet stream issues, talking to other pilots if they also have gone through clear air turbulence, for example. Pretty much no warning in some cases.
So in other words, and this is what I tend to do, and I'm sure it would be your recommendation, if you're on the aircraft and you're not doing anything, if you don't have to go move around, keep your seatbelt on.
No, absolutely. You should do that all the time. The pilots will always recommend that at the beginning. It's only essentially for telling you that you can go to the restroom. And especially on long-haul flights, I know it's uncomfortable. It's a 10-hour flight. In some cases, the seatbelt is uncomfortable. It's very tempting to actually remove that seatbelt. But it tends to happen in these types of situations. And it's something you never want to do. Just keep your seatbelt fast and make sure your kids are safe, especially make sure your infants are safe, and make sure for those that should be in a car seat that they are in a car seat.
I think if you went online, you could probably Google. There's some NASA safety audio of this, but if you've seen this in a movie, it really is sort of almost like that when it happens, where you see the person rise up off their feet and go flying into the ceiling. And that's a pretty significant thing, depending on, you know, where you're at and what you're close to. You could break bones.
No, absolutely. I think in this case, actually, somebody did break a bone. Dislocated shoulders occur. I mean, it's very, very dangerous. I mean, anytime you're going to hit your head on something, it's always dangerous. So these are one of those things where it doesn't happen very often. It's easy to be complacent, but it's a simple way to fix it is to always have your seatbelt fastened. Pilots never take their seatbelts off while they're sitting in their seat in the cabin. Generally, passengers shouldn't do that. They have to go to the restroom. You know, essentially, there's not much you can do about that other than make sure that the seatbelt sign is off in those situations. If it is on, some people have to do it as well. It's a recommendation from the pilot.
Rick, it seems like we don't go a day without hearing something about autonomous vehicles or self-driving vehicles. And I have to bring this to your attention if you haven't seen it, this report from UBS that says the aviation industry could save about $35 billion a year by moving to pilotless planes. Is that something that could happen?
I don't think that, clearly planes can fly themselves. Pilots have autopilot in the aircraft. The reason you have a pilot is for when you have emergency situations so that they can react. I doubt a machine would have actually landed in the Hudson River, for example, and that's why you want those pilots there. For the most part, most flights for all those 2 million people that fly each day have no issue. It's highly skilled, trained pilots you want when there is an issue.
Are we likely to see something like this happen with cargo planes more than commercial planes?
I guess in theory it could be because, you know, cargo is replaceable in theory, but I just don't expect that to occur anytime soon. I don't expect it to happen with cars as fast as some people are saying that it will occur. I think it will occur in some situations, but I think we're many, many decades away from that and not a few decades away.
And I think even if it did happen, I don't know about you, but I don't think I would get on a plane that didn't have a pilot on it.
I'm in the same boat. I want to be on a plane with somebody that wants to go to dinner just like I do with my family, to be honest. I mean, I'm a computer scientist. I know what can happen to computers, and I want somebody there as override for there. So for those people that think that that's a good idea, they can study it all they want, but if passengers decide not to fly, they won't do it.
Rick, we've been hearing a lot about some labor troubles for some of the commercial airlines in Europe, and I know we've been talking all year about people maybe perhaps planning summer trips to Europe. Are you aware of anything that might hinder plans if we're going over there late summer?
There's a variety of potential things going on in both the UK. It happens typically in France and Germany. I've been caught up at least three different times in labor issues over there and had to actually make all sorts of crazy plans to get back. You just need to keep an eye on it. Recently, British Airways said there was going to be issues in July. Lufthansa and Air France also notified us, but it can happen over there much more frequently than it happens here. And when it does happen, it usually happens for 3 or 4 days. And it usually happens around important events like World Cup, because that's when labor believes it has the maximum impact.
Is it like a weather situation where a flight is canceled that they have to find you?
It's typically a bit worse because it usually lasts 3 or 4 days. So essentially you have to make a secondary plans. I remember, for example, being caught up one during World Cup. I think it was in the late 90s. I can't remember exactly. In France, end up having to take a train all the way to the United Kingdom to find a flight to get back home.
Well, get us out of town. And a lot of people are talking about traveling to other places to possibly maybe see the eclipse. Where's the cheapest places to go right now?
Okay, well, out of Chicago, it's one of the cheapest places to fly out of. I was looking for nonstops, sort of the week after Labor Day weekend, which is a little more expensive. But you can get to places like, if you're out in the desert and you want to fly, go out a little bit, Las Vegas, and then you can go back and do some gambling. It's $100 round trip right now. West Coast, Los Angeles is about 30% cheaper than San Francisco at $160, both good prices. If you want to go into Florida, Miami, and Orlando, both under $150 round trip. If you want to go a little further north, Calgary is your best bet there at $320 round trip nonstop. As well, Portland is running about $100 cheaper than Seattle right now at about $230 round trip.
All right. Rick, happy travels.
Hey, thanks.
Rick Cini is the founder and CEO of FairCompare.com, based out of Dallas. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Cini and FairCompare at FairCompare on Twitter. One other aviation note, O'Hare is slated to get its first flight next year from the world's largest passenger aircraft. British Airways says it'll fly the Airbus A380 from Chicago to London's Heathrow daily beginning on May 8th. The A380 will hold about 469 passengers.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures pointing lower this morning, climbing, but still in the negative. Dow futures off 17. NASDAQ futures off about 13. S&P futures are lower as well. Gold and silver are trading higher this morning. Let's check the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning. Happy Friday to Orion Samuelson.
Well, happy Friday to you as well, but it wasn't a happy Thursday or Friday to the grain traders at the Chicago Board of Trade, Steve, because the first real crop report of the season was issued yesterday morning at 11 o'clock. The August crop report based on projections, but based on planted acres and actual weather conditions. And I always ask analysts after the monthly crop reports come out, any surprises? Well, I put that question to Paul Georgie, who is chairman of Allendale in McHenry, Illinois, yesterday, and he said there was a ton of surprises in the report. So let me quickly take a look at them. The USDA forecast for corn yield and production, as well as soybean yield and production, topped the high end of expectations, with the soybean outlooks at a record high. The USDA put corn production at 14,153,000,000 bushels based on an average yield of 169.5 bushels per acre. Those figures, if realized, would both be the third biggest ever. And analysts' forecasts for corn production range from 13.6 billion bushels to a little more than 14 billion bushels, with an average of 13.8. So it came in well above that. For soybeans, 4,381,000,000 bushels. That would be bigger than last year's harvest. And it also was based on soybean yields at 49.4 bushels per acre. So all of those numbers coming in higher than expected. And as a result, at the end of the trading day yesterday, November soybeans were down 29¾ cents a bushel, December corn down 13 cents, and September wheat down 17½ cents a bushel. And one more note on the crop size, Steve. After the 11 o'clock report yesterday, the Department of Agriculture updated farmer reported crop planting totals for August. And farmers who participated in crop subsidy programs reported prevented plantings, meaning they weren't able to plant the acres because, well, basically too wet. And as of August 1st, prevented plantings of corn, 950 million acres, and 437 million acres of soybeans, 614 million acres of wheat. So more than enough surprises in the August crop report that came out yesterday.
Yeah, you mentioned the wet part of that, but I noticed in the report, the bigger report, that corn suffered from some hot, dry conditions, too, during that critical period.
We're beginning to look at some rather serious drought conditions in parts of Iowa, no question of that. The states that did show an increase in production of corn, particularly in the southeast, and Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia and places like that, and that's not considered to be the corn area of the United States. We look to Iowa and Illinois and Indiana, the three I's, as we call them. And so this one is going to have to be watched. But talking to Paul Georgie of Allendale, he also said that more often than not, the market rallies after the first crop report, and so we'll see if there is a rally. I'm looking this morning, for example, at December corn up a penny a bushel, and November soybeans are trading up 1¼ cents a bushel, while September wheat is down a penny in the overnight trade at the moment at the Board of Trade. Illinois State Fair time, so if you haven't had your corn dog or your barbecued ribs or whatever, you better get out and do it pretty soon, Steve.
Yeah, the big butter. Could you see the big butter cow and her calf yesterday?
Oh, yes, indeed. That's very nice. Always a tradition at the Illinois State Fair. Oh, and I should mention that tonight at 7 o'clock in the Junior Livestock Barn at the Illinois State Fair, the Illinois Masters Showmanship Contest will be held. I've said dozens of times over the years, if you want to see drama, you go to the judging arena where you'll see a 12-year-old girl trying to make a 1,200-pound steer behave and look well in the eyes of the judges. And that'll be some of the best drama you'll see on any stage anywhere in the world. So
I love it. Orrin, what's on the big show tomorrow?
Tomorrow, Jim Fizell to talk about some of the challenges gardeners have had this year because of the weather. And we'll be talking more about the market and crop report reaction with Paul Georgie of Allendale. So, and we'll go over the weekend rundown for county and state fairs as well.
All right, Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, Orion Samuelson, make sure you tune in tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock. It's the Morning Show with Orion and Max. It's time now for the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, August 11th. A couple of things on the calendar today we'll be watching. Major business economic events include the Labor Department's release of the Consumer Price Index for July. JCPenney Company will report quarterly financial results before the market opens, ending a really rough week for retailers who have been reporting weak earnings this week. In earnings season as they wrap up the week here. But JCPenney out today, so we'll be watching that. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, August 11th.